Thank you, and hello, everybody. Perfect. My name is Björn Flitsche. I'm currently the quality assurance manager for MRX Labs, which is one of the largest cannabis testing sites here in the state. And as part of my job, my primary job responsibility is actually the compliance with the new state-mandated rules that are going into effect, already have gone into effect. Specifically, what's happening is that Oregon is the first state and pretty much the first place in the world that is going to accredit cannabis labs to the same standard as environmental and drinking water labs, which is commonly known as the NELAC standard. I'm going to outline briefly here how the testing of cannabis is done, and then Jeremy, I believe, is going to cover some area regarding to marketing and labeling of products. Let's hope this works. It does. All righty. The cannabis testing industry in Oregon did not exist prior to the passage of the House Bill 3460. To be fair, there were a few small facilities that did do potency testing prior to this law, but those were not required, hence the clientele was very small. The House Bill 3460 required that all product that makes into a dispensary has to be tested for its potency, mold and mildew, as well as pesticide residue. However, initial rules, unfortunately, did not establish any standards for the laboratories, nor testing standards, nor did they even define a clear list of analytes. It's basically, there's a few thousands of pesticides out there, and every lab was essentially allowed or required to pick their own list, which is part of the reason why there were quite a bit of discrepancies between different labs. The new rules, Oregon accredited rules 33007 and 333064, now defines very specific testing rules for Oregon. Specifically, they will require that labs will be accredited under state rules and that they all used validatable and peer-reviewed methods to test the product. One further, please. Perfect. Yes, the new requirements in Oregon for the first time are actually defining something which is very important, which was undefined until now, which is the total THC and the total CBD for products on the shelves, which is another explanation why there were such discrepancies between different labs. In the past, the labs had essentially the choice to pick between adding all the THC compounds, THCA, Delta-9 THC, in some cases Delta-8 THC, and even THCV, to the THC's total. And Oregon finally has made a clear definition on how total THC is defined. Also, instead of the just four core categories that were initially required on testing here in Oregon, the state now requires a very specific list of 60 pesticides, which actually comes down with the isomers to a few more than that even, and has set specific action limits or limits at which point we have to fail the sample for all of the individual pesticides. Finally, instead of the currently available or required test for mold and mildew, the state of Oregon actually chose initially to go to both E. coli and Salmonella. However, after it was clear that the sampling amounts that would be required for salmonella testing would be incredibly large, they now will only require E. coli testing. And the idea behind that is primarily that this is an indicator organism, meaning that if you find E. coli, essentially, essentially, I like to call them the bathroom microbes on your product. There's likely some other issues with your product that we may not have noticed. Hence, that would then also require the product to be rejected. Finally, and that is very important with the concentrates becoming available recreationally soon, is the fact that residual solvent testing is currently not required. Most concentrates and extracts are produced using hydrocarbon solvents such as butane, propane. Some of them use alcohol, hexane, and then there's also the option of supercritical CO2, which is of all the options the most safest one. After October 1st, it is required that all products sold in Oregon will be tested for residual solvents. And again, the state made a very specific list and very specific limits of depending on how toxic the individual compounds are. to get a little bit further onto the total THC and total CBD and how it's going to be defined. Oregon has defined total THC as the total potential activated cannabinoids, which essentially means that even if the product contains a certain amount of THCA acid form, which is generally how the active ingredient in cannabis grows on the plant, we actually are reporting which the total amount of Delta 9 THC, which would be possible if all of it was converted perfectly. As part of that, the conversion actually, when THCA gets converted into Delta 9, which by the way is something that normally happens when you quite literally smoke the product, heat activates this product, it usually happens in the bowl, is that about 13% of the weight of the THCA gets lost into CO2 and goes into the atmosphere. Hence, the actual formula for the total THC accounts for these 13% loss, which you see here is the where this 8.77 comes in. Essentially, that accounts for the loss in weight there. What we're looking at here is, just to give a quick view how we actually, what we look at when we test cannabis, this is a chromatogram for potency. We basically have machines that pull apart the sample more or less after we extract it into a liquid and let us look at all the individual cannabinoids, well, individually. We actually measure the area below the peaks of each of the individual cannabinoids, and that one is then directly linear to the concentration of the sample. For pesticide testing, that is actually the most difficult part of the work that we do because cannabis is chemically extremely complex. We have to test for 60 pesticides at levels down to a few hundred parts per billion, which is part of the reason why very advanced equipment is needed. We specifically use a liquid chromatograph triple mass spec. The other option is to use gas chromatography. It requires additional sample cleanup and hence limits the throughput a little bit and is overall quite a bit slower. But both methods, if properly validated and executed, are valid. To give you an idea what we look at when we look at pesticide detections. There we go. This is a pesticide chromatogram. It essentially, we literally look on an atomic level. We measure for specific ions that are unique to each compound and how those compounds break down. By doing that, the machine can actually look at multiple compounds at the same time, measure them, and that allows us to test for the full 60 pesticide in just around 15 minutes or so. The last part that is required, or not quite the last, the last part that is currently required in Oregon is the microbiological testing. The new requirements will primarily be E. coli testing, which is very similar to what's already being done on drinking water. And there's quite a variety of test methods available. As I said, E. coli is considered an indicator organism in this context, and the turnaround time of those tests is generally overnight. However, there are newer methods now, like it's PCR, that even can do those results in a few hours. Something to keep in mind about any microbiological testing is that that's where most likely your sample size is going to increase. We don't have any solid numbers yet. Part of the reason why salmonella testing was initially rejected was because the potential testing amount of up to 25 grams per test, which even we were not exactly comfortable with, so that was pushed back. On the E. coli side, we don't have any solid numbers yet, but we're likely to be in an actual requirement below than what the state is going to mandate soon, which is 0.5% of the batch that we test. Last one, and this one is not currently required, but it's going to be required after going on October 1st, and to be quite honest, any dispensary owner out there would highly recommend to ask for these reports from your concentrate producers already, because some people will brew certain things in their garages using essentially a lighter fuel, and there's a number of carcinogenic compounds usually left afterwards. However, the vast majority of samples we see are indeed clean, as most of our producers have learned very quickly on how to do it properly. The primary concern that people always have is the butane extracted concentrates, the BHOs. They're inherently actually not that bad. The butane itself is pretty non-toxic. The issue is primarily that there are contaminants in specifically the gas station fuel that some people use. So anybody that operates any type of butane extraction equipment should always make sure that they get high quality butane from a source that is essentially clean or ultra pure grade. How we specifically test for those samples is we use a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer with a headspace attachment, which is the only real method to do this currently. We essentially expose the sample to an amount of heat and then measure quite literally the airspace above it to see if any of the solvents moved into the airspace. And that allows us to detect all the residual solvents that are currently acquired to far below the levels that the state will require us going forward to October 1st. One important thing that is going to be happening after October 1st, that is all labs are going to have to be accredited to the TNI 2009 standard. The TNI, or the NELAC Institute, is a National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Conference, and they're essentially setting the gold standards on how a lab should operate, and both in the sense of what quality control measures there should be. Well, the mere fact that there has to be a quality control manager like me is part of these rules. And the state of Oregon is actually leading in the accreditation of environmental labs, which is why why the state chose to put the cannabis testing labs also under the ORLAB program, which is essentially the division of the Oregon Health Authority that quite literally comes to our labs for a few days, reviews everything we do, reviews every document, interviews our staff, follows samples through the lab, sees how we handle mistake, and pretty much everything you can imagine. Operating under TNI 2009 is a bit more difficult than what we previously used to. The heaviest part is that we have to document everything. We have to be always able to trace back every sample down to the analyte that came in. We have to be able to determine which pipetter was used, which solvent was used, which machine run it. All of those factors will have to be tightly controlled and documented. And something that is also very unique to being accredited under the TNI, and specifically under ORLAB, is that any individual in a laboratory that willingly falsifies reports can be held individually criminally liable. Meaning, if I falsify reports, I can go to jail. So it's not going to happen. The accreditation timeline, these are some important dates that are currently, and these are always subject to change. The first change that already has happened on February 1st, that we switched to a reporting list to the requirements under the TNI standards. They have very specific rules on how we have to report our results, and specifically how we have to show what we test for and everything that we test for, versus in the past where quite a few labs would essentially issue just pass-fail results without giving any specific details. After March 1st, all labs had to submit their quality manual, which is basically the minimal building block when operating under TNI, to the OHA. Virtually all labs in the state have done that, and while I don't know to what level OHA reviewed these quality manuals, I can tell you that there was 8 minutes between me submitting it and us getting approved on a 120-page document. So, leave it at that. However, now it gets starting to get serious. June 1st is where most labs will have to be accredited to continue to test cannabis product, and that accreditation has to be for every test they execute on the sample, or they have to outsource those tests to a laboratory which is accredited. And finally, after October 1st, dispensaries will only be allowed to accept product that has been tested under those new rules. Any product that is still on the shelves at this point will have to be labeled as not tested under the new rules. Last but not least, here's a little bit about the lab where I work at, MRX Labs. We are one of the state-of-the-art facilities here in the state for cannabis testing, and we are, both by market share and physical location, the largest testing facility in the state, and by that definition, likely the largest in the U.S., since Oregon has the largest testing market. We pride ourselves very much on our turnaround times. This is why we maintained all of our testing in-house instead of outsourcing pesticides like some of our competitors. And we offer courier services while we are located in Tigard, Oregon, just south of Portland. We have couriers going all over the state, and we can pick up samples on site as well as seal product for later sale to dispensaries. Most importantly, we love visitors. Please, if you're ever in the Tigard area between our business hours, stop on by. We're happy to show you how our lab operates. It's really kind of cool.